Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Friday. So much fun. Talking Aliens, live in Los Angeles, it's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson on our show next hour to talk about the possibility of aliens. Now, if you missed it, Alex Curry filling in for Joy. How are you, Alex?
Oh, I'm doing great. And I am so happy that we have had so much alien talk and UFO talk. I am all about it, and I am here for it today.
I am as well. So this all started a couple days ago when Baker Mayfield was in Austin, Texas with his beautiful wife. And he saw something, and then he rushed to Twitter and said, I think I just saw a UFO. And anybody else see it? In Lake Travis. And I, of course, went on the air. I had to comment on that. I went on for about 2 minutes, kind of rolled my eyes, kind of snarky, obviously tongue-in-cheek. And, you know, I don't like Tom Brady and Troy Aikman, Terry Bradshaw, Joe Montana. They didn't see UFOs. And then Tom Brady followed up yesterday with a tweet, how do you know I've never seen aliens, Colin? He acknowledged my existence. It was a good day for me. But you know what I thought about when I saw that? Actually, Tom Brady's having fun because that's always who Tom Brady's been. But he acquiesced for Bill Belichick in New England. But this is who he is. He's laughing more. He goes on Howard Stern, talks about his marriage. He's on James Corden. He's very funny. He's getting drunk during victory parades. He's fantastic on social media. He's got a great sense of humor. This is, of course, who Tom has always been. When they signed Gronk, he went to Twitter. Football's fun again. I was talking to Eric Mangini about this. Eric and Tom were together. They won 3 Super Bowls before Mangini went and later coached the Browns and the Jets. And Mangini said, teams can struggle with this. Tom Brady, how you enter a business is how you're often viewed forever, regardless of how much you grow. So Tom Brady is drafted in the 6th round. Not paid much, always takes a pay cut. He's part of a system led by defense. But then Tom grows and changes, and he becomes a father and wealthy, and he nears middle age, and he's married, and he's got his own brand, and he has a net worth second to no pro athlete in America. His wife's a supermodel. And Fun Tom is still asked to suppress and to take a pay cut. And he does willingly because he wants to win. But New England still wants under our thumb Tom. And he got tired of it. In that documentary, you saw it. You heard him bark on the sidelines. You heard the quotes after he left New England. Tom had changed. He wanted a voice now. He wanted to have fun now. That's who the true Tom has always been. But for the sake of the team, because he's a team guy, he suppresses that. This is exactly what is happening to Russell Wilson in Seattle. He entered the Seahawks as 3rd-round pick, Russell. Little too short for the position, Russell. Hand off to Marshawn Lynch, Russell. Defense wins the games, don't screw it up, Russell. Never create controversy, just say, go Hawks, Russell. And then Russell, like Tom, becomes a Hall of Fame-level player and wealthy and great and marries a strong, beautiful, successful woman. Just like New England couldn't pivot in later years, Seattle's struggling to pivot with Russell Wilson. This happens. All of us at one point have told our parents, hey, I'm not a kid anymore. You know, you intern at a job, and then they hire you. You no longer want to go grab your boss coffee. You're an employee. Things have changed. You're valuable. I've told interns before, you can intern at a place, but eventually leave it, because you'll be viewed by a lot of people in that building as, oh, he was an intern. Go succeed somewhere else, come back and be seen differently, enter the company at a higher level. Tom's having fun. Tom's always been fun. You ask guys around him, the Kentucky Derby, the parties, the travel. This is who Brady's always been. But with New England, he had to hold back. And as he grew and flourished, became the GOAT, became the biggest star in the biggest sport in America, New England struggled to pivot off that. In the end, he wanted a voice. And can you imagine? They wouldn't give Tom Brady a voice. What was attractive about Tampa is Bruce Arians would. Pete Carroll, are you watching? This is all Russell Wilson wants. He's not third-round Russell anymore. He's not go Hawks during every comment. I like that Tom Brady acknowledged my existence. I'm not going to lie to you about that. It does remind me of the old joke, though. There's an old joke about alien sightings. You know where you never see alien sightings? Harvard. I'm just joking. All right, here's another story. Ben Roethlisberger got a new contract, but it wasn't a great one for Ben Roethlisberger. It was a take it or leave it contract. Yeah, 14 mil down from almost 20. And it opened up $15 million in cap space for Pittsburgh. So he gets 1 year, very little money, and they're clearly going to move on at some point, probably 2022. So let's talk about Pittsburgh today. They still have a very good roster. Two of their linebackers, their best linebackers, were hurt. One of them comes back. Two may, but one for sure. They always draft and develop players well, and they've now added salary cap. So the Steelers next year will be good. How do I know that? Because the Steelers virtually every year are good. But they become the TV show, Entourage, Friends, The Office, where they decide to bring it back one more year. And then halfway through it, you're like, why? The actors were all rich enough. It's played out. And you tell your buddies, no reason to watch this season of The Entourage. The Steelers are going to go, if I had to pick this morning, 9-7, maybe 10-6, probably a wild card team in their division, 1-done. That's happened a lot recently. And they won't be a Super Bowl team. And the problem is, next year at this time, it's a really bad year to need a quarterback in the NFL draft. And so Pittsburgh's going to be good. They're going to win a bunch of games. They're probably going to finish second in their division, wild card team, have to go on the road against, you know, like a Kansas City or a Buffalo, and they'll lose. And they'll be asking themselves, why didn't we start working on this replace Big Ben thing like 3 years ago? So they'll be good, though. Not going to be bad, because Pittsburgh's not bad, and Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. And Big Ben is good enough to win some games. But finally, Pittsburgh gave him a take it or leave it contract, and he took it. And I do think that's getting some cap space in that division, which I think next year Cincinnati's a real team, is going to be really log jam. It's going to be a lot of 9-7 in that division next year, including potentially Cincinnati.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
So when Russell Wilson and or his agent listed the four teams he would possibly play for, the one that didn't make a ton of sense to most people was Chicago. Now we're learning why Russell Wilson is interested in Chicago. According to report, he likes the idea of turning around a historic NFL franchise. He also sees them as an emerging offensive line, a solid offensive-minded coach, and the intriguing market of Chicago. Don't think these quarterbacks aren't looking around the league and seeing what works. When Tom Brady went to Tampa, I was just reading a story this morning, Jason Light, the GM, said it was like he'd been scouting us. He knew our personnel. He knew what we needed. He knew what I wanted. Tom Brady called them and interviewed the Bucks. They didn't interview him. So Peyton Manning to Denver reminds me of Russell to Chicago. Remember when Peyton Manning went to Denver? They were just 8-8 the year before, but squeaked into the playoffs. They had an emerging offensive line, Ryan Clady, a very good young player. They had two stars on offense, receivers. What are the Bears? 8-8, made the playoffs. Russell sees them as an emerging offensive line. And they have two offensive stars, Tariq Cohen coming off an injury, and the great wide receiving talent, Allen Robinson. They also have a young tight end from Notre Dame I love. So Chicago may sound a little strange. Do you want to go into a division with Aaron Rodgers twice a year? Will Tom Brady enter the division with the heavily favored Drew Brees and the Saints twice a year? So what you get in common with Tom in Tampa and Peyton Manning in Denver, and if he ever went to Chicago, Russell Wilson with the Bears, is these are not finished products. They see themselves as the missing piece. And there's also two things very attractive to Russell Wilson in Chicago. He can go, Mitch Trubisky went 25-13 with Matt Nagy. What am I going to go? And also, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, the head coach and general manager respectively in Chicago, are a little bit on the hot seat. They don't have the power of Pete Carroll. And that's one of the things turning off Russell. Very much so in Seattle.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
It's really interesting. Having spent over a decade on the East Coast, I noticed this. The New York media is really tough on you early, but then they're pussycats. They'll support you, Joe Torre, Derek Jeter, Eli Manning. They'll support you. You win early, they've got your back forever. It's a redeemable media. The Boston media is often fawning early. They fawn over the new stars. And then they just wait for you to fail. And then there's the Philadelphia media. They just mostly hate you. And a lot of this is because Philadelphia wants to come off as tough. It is the classic, I'll give you an example why. New York's where all the money is on the East Coast. Boston's got Harvard, MIT, the IQ, the smart city on the East Coast, and great sports history. D.C.'s got all the power, and Philly has cheesesteaks. And they got a chip on their shoulder. They got a chip on both shoulders. They're balanced. So in Philadelphia, they're always trying to prove themselves as fans and as media. They're relentless, even if you're great. They're always trying to prove, hey, we're tougher than New York, Boston, and D.C. And they've had this, they take pride in this attitude. And that is why it is tougher to play in Philadelphia than New York, Boston, and D.C. to me in that corridor. Now, the good news for Carson Wentz, this is very good news. Charles Barkley left Philly and won more. Reggie White left Philly and won a Super Bowl. Andy Reid left Philadelphia and won a Super Bowl. Curt Schilling left Philly and won two World Series. It is often much easier to play in other places than Philadelphia. You know, Rocky is the ultimate hero in Philadelphia. And Rocky is the underdog. Nobody believes in me. I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's why he is today still like the hero of Philadelphia. He is Philadelphia. But it is a tough place to play. And when I lived out in the East Coast, I really felt that. Philadelphia was always trying to prove itself because D.C. has the power and New York's got the money and Boston's got the Harvard and the MIT and the 50 universities and a lot of winning. And Philadelphia wants to prove they belong. Tough place to play and tough media.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, Steve Keim has been he is swinging for the fences. And he hired a coach and had to move off him in a year. And he drafted a quarterback and had to move off him in a year. And it's worked. And he went out and got DeAndre Hopkins. And he went out and just got J.J. Watt. And in the best division in football, you cannot sit on your hands. Les Snead's a go-for-it guy. John Schneider is. John Lynch is. And Steve Keim is now joining us, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best for nothing. All right, Steve, great to have you on a Friday. Great to see you again and talk to you again. I love that you come on the show. So you have gone big on this stuff. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say, Steve, you guys were fourth in sacks. You got Chandler Jones. Did you really need a $15 million, $14 million pass rusher? And to that, you would say what?
Well, I mean, I think that anytime you have the ability to acquire a player like J.J. Watt, not only what he brings to the team on the field, Colin, but the things that he does in the locker room, his infectious personality, his passion for the game. And really something that I felt like that we vastly needed was somebody that can hold people accountable internally. And that's something that comes to attention to detail. Last year, we led the National Football League in penalties, and that was unacceptable. So to be able to acquire a guy like this who can, in some regards, self-police your locker room, it was a huge coup for us, in my opinion.
You know, I've said this for years. When Brady was playing in the AFC East or Peyton Manning was playing in the AFC North, you had to, as a general manager, consider drafting pass rushers. You had to make those quarterbacks uncomfortable. Now Matt Stafford's in your division. You already got Russell in your division. When Jimmy G is healthy, he got to a Super Bowl in the 1 year he was. Is some of this Steve Keim looking around and going, all right, I got Matt Stafford in my division. I can't have a good enough pass rush.
There's no doubt. I mean, I think that you can even point to the Super Bowl and say that that was the one team that was able to get Patrick Mahomes off his spot. Anytime you can get all these talented quarterbacks off their spot, they have to throw from other angles. They get flushed out of the pocket. They get flustered. It gets them out of their game. To me, that is the recipe for success. And we all know that you have to run the ball, stop the run to be effective to win football games. But when you create a situation where quarterbacks are uneasy, and now that we have Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt on the same front, I think that poses a problem.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You've been very aggressive. I talked to Les Snead about a month ago, and he's like, hey, in this division, you just got to be aggressive. This is the reality of it. Everybody's good. And you went out and got Kyler Murray. And I said, full disclosure, I'm like, man, he looks small. I don't know if this is going to work. And then about three games in, I'm like, okay, this kid's great. I get the move. I thought he made a heck of a jump last year. But if you looked at passing stats alone, you'd say, eh. But if you looked at total touchdowns, pocket presence, what did you see as a GM? Where did you see the growth in Kyler Murray last year?
Same thing, command of the offense, progression, ability to see the field. Really all of those things were the areas that I see that he continues to grow. And to me, that's what happens to all young quarterbacks who are really talented. It takes a little bit of time, but you also look back at his track record, and he didn't play a ton of college football. He never played spring ball because of baseball. And then now he goes to Oklahoma, has one big year, and comes to the NFL and is thrown right into the fire. and becomes Rookie of the Year. Second year, he's one of three NFC quarterbacks. So the trajectory and really where he is going is on the rise. And all he's going to do is get better, which is pretty scary because he hasn't scratched the surface yet.
Let's talk about your coach, Cliff Kingsbury. So he goes 5-10-1. He goes to 8-8. Where did he grow last year?
You know, I think it's just being comfortable being a head coach, being in front of a team, being able to hold the players accountable, which is something we continue to do better. And at the end of the day, just his presence alone. I think he does a fantastic job as a play caller, but we all know that head coaches aren't just play callers. We're talking about guys who are CEOs and leaders and have to be in front of not only offensive players, but the defensive players and the special teams players as well.
You know, Larry Fitzgerald is literally a player I could see at some point, and I'm not joking here, vying for commissionership. He's that kind of human being. I think at some point we will have a former player be a commissioner perhaps, or number two in charge of the NFL. I think he has such an important DNA in any locker room. Will he be back? Where does he stand this morning on that?
He hasn't told us yet. We have respected the process for him and given him his space like we have every year. Generally, Michael and I will talk to Larry prior to free agency, but you nailed it. I mean, this guy is as special as it gets, as tremendous of a player as he has been. He's even a better person. He's so charismatic. He could run for governor. He could be the president. I mean, really, anything that Larry Fitzgerald sets his mind to do to me in the future, he is going to have a tremendous amount of success no matter what he does.
Okay, you don't have to name specifics because I know you GMs get in trouble with this stuff. But in terms of the draft, some of my guys have said it's great for about 4.5 rounds. Then there's a lot of good players. Give me, and you can be somewhat vague here, give me your last 7-8 drafts. Where does this one rank? Where is it good? Where is it not maybe as good?
Well, I think it's really strong at a number of positions. I think there's a number of linebackers in this draft that are strong, wide receivers. I think there are some pass rushers that are very, very talented. But I do agree that I think once you get into rounds 4 and 5, because of the COVID situation, because of players opting out, some of the guys having to return to college, some of the depth in the later rounds may not be there as it was in the past.
You know, finally, Steve, we're seeing something. In the NBA, it's always been understood as a players' league. Even when I was an NBA fan in the 70s, it was a players' league. It wasn't a coaches' league. Football's always been a GM coaches sport. But increasingly, Russell Wilson wants an opinion. Tom Brady wants an opinion. Deshaun Watson wants an opinion. You have an emerging star at quarterback. How do you manage that as he gets better, he gets richer, he learns the game? You know, he plays 6, 7, 8, 9 years, has more success. Do you see that as a challenge? How the quarterbacks now in America are literally the stars of the country. They're bigger than our politicians. They're bigger than NBA guys. They're like soccer stars in Europe. How do you manage when your star quarterback wants a voice?
I actually go the other way, Colin. I embrace it. To me, it means that our players are vested. They're bought into what we're doing. It doesn't mean that I have to agree, and it doesn't mean that we have to make those decisions that those guys are interested in. But I think whenever you hear these guys talk about different players or things that they would love to see us do, to me, it goes back to show that they're football junkies. They care about the game. They care about the organization. And quite frankly, they want to win. Again, I think there's a line you draw in the sand where you have to make decisions. And that's part of my job, part of Michael Bidwell's job, and part of Cliff's job. But at the end of the day, I love hearing from DeAndre Hopkins. Kyler Murray and I constantly text each other about players. Larry Fitzgerald, the same thing. I really do embrace that. And I think that it can help lead to success because so many times they're the same guys that you're asking to help recruit J.J. Watt.
Yeah. Steve Keim, 9th year. Cardinals GM. Great seeing you again. Next time you're in LA, I'll make Fox pick up the tab. So just get a hold of me.
Let's do it, Colin.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
So yesterday was obviously a lot of fun for us. Baker Mayfield a couple nights ago said him and his beautiful wife Emily were out to dinner in Austin, Texas, and they saw a UFO and wondered if anybody else saw the UFO. I'd prefer my quarterbacks not talk about that, but Brady responded when I kind of poked fun at Baker Mayfield. Brady yesterday went on Twitter and said, "Colin, how do you know? I've never seen aliens," which I, by the way, is the way I like my franchise quarterback to talk about aliens, with a wink. This is something fans have a blind spot about. Like, listen, the media has blind spots too. The media leans left. They have since I've been in this business 30 years. They lean left politically. They always have. They can never admit it changes their coverage. It's a blind spot for the media. They lean left. They've done polls on it. 75% of newspaper writers are Democrats. The media just can't own the fact that their personal feelings get in the way of their coverage. I've been 30 years, multiple TV stations. They've all leaned left. And by the way, I'm saying that as a Democrat. There's a saying in sports and in our business called stepping in it. You don't want to step in it. The three best athletes in my lifetime, stars, who never stepped in it: Brady, Michael Jordan, and Derek Jeter. Not a coincidence they came from really great families. They were very secure in themselves. They never stepped in it. They always said the right thing. They didn't inflame situations. All those years of being interviewed, they talked and said nothing. Always about winning in the team. They stayed out of the newspapers. They understood they not only represented themselves, but owners, leagues, conferences, momentum. Baker Mayfield's very talented, but he's stepped in it three or four times already. He called out the medical staff in Cleveland. The organization was pissed. I know, I was told that inside the building. He called out Duke Johnson's money. He stepped in it. He sparred with me on social media. They asked him not to. Now, I don't think calling out a UFO qualifies as stepping in it. I don't. But this stuff is monitored by teams. Jimmy Garoppolo out to dinner with a porn star. All of you said it doesn't matter. I told you on the air. Yeah, it does. Garoppolo got yelled at by the owner and the GM. Mark Sanchez did a photo shoot in GQ before he ever played a game. They weren't happy. Dwayne Haskins with a selfie on the sideline. He lost the coaching staff that day. Jameis Winston's college nonsense. It didn't land well for a lot of people. Folks, Baker Mayfield's talented and just got crappy, historically bad Cleveland to the playoffs. Why aren't they giving him a contract extension? You know the answer. He stepped in it. And in 2018, he was very good at the end of the year. And what did he do in the offseason? Put on weight and did a dozen commercials. They weren't happy. And he just had success. And what is the organization doing? Waiting to see what Baker they get in 2021. My opinion is, he'll be Baker. He'll be outspoken, be a little bit of a maverick, a little bit of a contrarian. That's okay. And I do think he's talented. And I don't think he's a bad guy at all. A little cocky, a little immature when he came in the league. That's okay. Not everybody's perfect. But this is one of these things. The media has a blind spot and never admits it. This is the fans' blind spot. This stuff doesn't matter. It does matter to high school principals and CEOs who have shareholders and franchise quarterbacks. You don't want to be in a picture with alcohol in your hand. You don't want to be out there screaming, "I saw an alien." You just don't. it's not the end of the world. I don't consider this stepping in it. But the way to talk aliens is the way Brady did yesterday, with a wink. It's funny. It's, you know, kind of sardonic. It's classic. And I do think Jeter, MJ, and Tom really had it's really rare this happens at a young age. I certainly wasn't capable of this. They always had an understanding. They were not only representing themselves, but they were representing many people beyond them. And that's why sometimes you keep thoughts to yourself. You bite your tongue. You're really upset, but you don't tell the media. That's incredibly human. But there is value in it. That's all I'm saying. There's value in it. You don't want to step in it. This doesn't qualify as stepping in it. But it is interesting. Why aren't they giving Baker an extension? He's certainly good enough. You want a playoff game. Everybody signs their quarterbacks early. I think they're waiting to see how he responds to some success.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Folks, every few times a decade, I'm going to bring on Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist from Harvard and Columbia, director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York City. In 2004, NASA bestowed upon him the Distinguished Public Service Medal. It's the highest civilian honor bestowed by NASA. He is smart, and he is funny, and he's entertaining, and he's an astrophysicist. So he's officially the smartest guest I bring on about three times a decade, and he is now joining us live. Okay. So we got the story about Baker Mayfield sees a UFO, and then I said, give me a break. I don't want my quarterback saying that, and Tom Brady shouts me out on Twitter and says, Colin, how do you know I haven't seen an alien? So these quarterbacks are all after me now. I will say this. Okay, I will say this. Every time I hear about this, I've always had a theory, Neil, that some of this stuff is space junk. And I've seen some of that stuff. And if you get away from light pollution in small towns, you see a bunch of stuff. And some of it could be our government that doesn't want to give a heads up to other governments or us working on military projects. That is my theory. Is that nonsense or is some of that true?
It could be all of the above. I mean, so why would the government want you to know if it's experimenting on top secret aircraft, for example? So they're not going to want you to know. And by the way, in the 1960s, there was Project Blue Book. A subtext of the Project Blue Book, which, by the way, was the investigation of UFOs, was, by the way, keep reporting them if you see them, because it could be a Russian experimental aircraft.
Right.
And we were in the middle of the Cold War. So if you crowdsource the monitoring of the sky, then you can be way more effective than just simple regional military observations of what might be happening up there. So sure. And by the way, if you see a UFO, it just means you didn't know what it was. That's what the U stands for, unidentified. So it's not a problem if your quarterback see something in the sky and they don't know what it is. What else are they going to call it but a UFO? So give them a break.
All right. Cool. All right. I'll scale back on that. Okay. I want to show you, Neil, from 1905 to now, I'm going to show you a map of UFO sightings in America.
Cool.
And there's a lot of them around New Mexico and Arizona. There's a lot Midwest, Great Lakes region, a lot over there, it looks like Virginia, New York City. When you see any of that, does that mean anything to you? Why would they be in those areas?
Well, first of all, you'd expect there to be more sightings where there's a higher population. So therefore, you see more green dots near Chicago and in the Northeast Corridor and over LA, San Diego, as I recognize these places on the map up there near Seattle. So you expect there to be near population centers because there's just simply more people. So A. B, today, everybody's got a smartphone with a high-resolution camera for still pictures and video. So if those were sightings of Bigfoot, the internet would be full of high-resolution photos and videos of Bigfoot trying to escape. We don't have any such data other than people's eyewitness accounts. And in science, eyewitness testimony is the lowest form of evidence, whereas in the court of law, it's a very high form of evidence. And you ask a psychologist, how's that eyewitness testimony going in your suspect who was just shocked by what they saw? It doesn't bode well. Then where we do have some kind of video evidence, I'm disappointed that it's sort of fuzzy, monochromatic, like the Navy video that's been to the Tic Tac, right?
Right.
So is that the best video you have? Everybody's got a camera. And if they are aliens, are they only just revealing themselves to the Navy? That would be kind of weird. All right. I'm just thinking, you know? So it's fuzzy monochromatic video. So I don't know what those things are. Okay. And that's kind of the end of my sentence. And admitting that I don't know what it is does not give me the right to then declare that I do know what it is. Just think about that, right? I say, oh, I don't know what it is. Therefore, it must be visiting aliens from outer space, curious about us on Earth. How do you justify the rest of those conclusions? But you, by the way, go keep, if you think they're aliens, keep chasing them down. I'm just not, personally, I'm not convinced enough by fuzzy monochromatic video and testimonies from people to devote my time or energy to investigate it. But let them do it. If they can snare an alien, bring him to town hall, into the square, you don't need me. Everybody will have cell phones. You won't need me. You won't give a rat's ass what I think or say, because right. You'll be rich and famous overnight.
Okay, here's another question. And again, you're an astrophysicist. I'm clearly not. So I always hear this. Well, there is a life form out there, and they're going to be super intelligent for us mere mortals. And I think to myself, is it possible if we did find a colony or a bunch of aliens, they couldn't even figure out how to use a zipper? I mean, they just did not be any smarter than me. Is it possible we're the smarter form?
Okay. No. Have you looked around the world recently?
Okay. All right.
Wait. That's my first point. But a better argument would be if they manage to travel to Earth through the depths of interstellar space, They're smarter than us.
Okay.
They got more technology than us.
Okay.
All right. We haven't been out of low Earth orbit since 1973. So I'm thinking they're smarter than us. And if they're really, really, really smarter than us, we might ask, what kind of hubris do we have to think that they're going to care what we think at all? When you walk by a colony of worms, are you saying, gee, I wonder what they're thinking? No, you don't care what they're thinking. You step on them, okay? So probably, if they've never visited us, it's because they've decided that there's no sign of intelligent life.
That's a good answer. That's why you're an astrophysicist. Okay.
Now, and by the way, I will get back to your quarterback. I read the description.
Yeah.
And I think it was at night, no brighter than twilight. And he saw a streak of light come down. It looks like it landed in Town Lake or wherever it was in Austin. And that's what meteors look like they do. Okay. So a bright meteor. A shooting star. My UFO dropped straight out of the sky.
Yeah.
There it is. We stopped and looked at each other and asked if we each saw it. That's good first check to see because you have multiple sources of data. Very bright ball of light going straight down out of the sky towards Lake Travis. Okay, so what he should do is go look at what meteors look like. And most of them just look like sort of simple shooting stars, but the occasional bigger one is called a bolide. We have special words for them. And they flash through the sky. It takes just half a second. It flashes through the sky, and at the end, sometimes they explode. And so they're really beautiful, and they're called bolides. And by the way, amateur astronomers, who, by the way, are really good at looking at the night sky, do not have a higher fraction of what they see identified as UFOs because they are highly trained in what they look like, because they spend their whole lives looking up at night. So I think if there were aliens visiting, the amateur astronomy community would catch it immediately. And by the way, amateur astronomer means you are an expert at the night sky. Unlike amateur neurosurgeon, you wouldn't go to that person for if you had an ailment. But if you want to know people who know the night sky like the back of their hand, they're called amateur astronomers.
This has been very, very good. By the way, I only have 1 minute left.
Oh, okay. I'll talk fast. Go.
Okay. Is there any new data on UFOs that has emerged, or is it the same thing for the last 100 years?
I'm not authorized to tell you anything. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just, I knocked out my headphones here. So all I'm just saying is that I think we are all in a position to crowdsource images of visiting aliens. And so I can't wait till people start producing images and or an alien itself and bring it into town. And that then you don't have to try to convince people with anybody's eyewitness testimony. That's all. And same with Bigfoot. With Bigfoot, you look up Bigfoot on the internet, the best evidence is home shot video from 1967. Is that your best evidence of a big hairy ape crawling around in the Pacific Northwest? No one else that saw him with a smartphone. So let us ask each other these other kinds of questions about if it really were aliens, what would it be? We would see them. Or if they didn't want us to see them, we wouldn't see them. And what's this about crashed flying saucers? What? That they navigate the depths of intergalactic space and they come to Earth and then they crash? I don't want to meet those aliens. Okay? give me the ones that know how to navigate.
Yeah, right. They navigate space, but they drive like, you know, we all did as teenagers the minute they hit Earth.
Drive like drunk teenagers. And like, no, I mean...
Makes no
crashed
sense.
Landing flying saucers. Excuse me?
Neil deGrasse Tyson, by the way, has a new
I'm
book.
I'm sorry. So I'm skeptical. Wait, I'm skeptical, but let him find it. Let it happen.
I want to read this book, Cosmic Queries, Star Talk's Guide to Who We Are, How We Got There, and Where We're Growing. Please. I'm going to purchase it. I hope you do. Neil?
There's a whole chapter on the search for life in it. So yeah, if you're into this, go for it.
Thank you for being patient and tolerating me, sir. I appreciate that once again.
Okay.
All right.
We good.
All right. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Absolute pleasure.